This is the Motley Fool Radio Show, and now it's time to go to the Fool Phones. The Fool Phone line's always open for your financial questions and comments. Our phone number, 866-NPR-FOOL. I'm joined, as always, by Dayana Yoakum, our resident personal finance expert at the Motley Fool. Dayana, welcome.
Thanks, David. And let's first go to San Antonio, Texas. Sarah is on the line. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good, how are you?
We are good.
Good.
So is that the royal we, Sarah?
Well, I have an infant, so it is a wee, but yeah.
Excellent.
The wee one in your arms is good. That's nice
exactly.
to hear.
Exactly.
Well, what's your question today?
Well, my husband and I were given a couple of years ago 200 shares of Kerr McGee, and they are trying to do a stock buyback and have offered to buy back our stock at above the market rate, as above what the stock is currently trading for. And my husband thinks we should do it. He thinks that they are going to accumulate too much debt in this process and that they are going to drop their dividend substantially. And most of the time we do dividend reinvestment with that. But frankly, I don't really understand much about why a company is doing the stock buyback. I understand his point of view about the percentage being dropped as far as the dividends go and how we could invest in something else and get a better dividend return.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, why are they buying back the stock, and is it a good move for us? Why would they be willing to buy back from us above what it would trade for?
Okay. Well, this is actually, there's the general question about stock buybacks. Are they good or bad for investors? And then the more specific one about Kerr McGee. What is happening with this company right now, and is this a good, you know, a good opportunity for you and your husband?
I'm going to take those in reverse order, Dayana.
Okay.
Kerr McGee, as best I can understand, I've looked into this situation a little. I have to claim that I'm not wholly familiar with Kerr McGee. Actually, let me ask, how did you were given the shares?
Yes, every year we are given shares of different companies, and my husband had an uncle who was heavily involved in Kerr McGee as a younger man, and when he passed away, we got quite a few shares. We got 200 shares of Kerr McGee stock.
And Sarah, as I can understand it, it looks as if that share buyback has already finished. Are you aware of that?
I know that it was happening. However, my husband's conversation was, should we have offered it up or not?
Okay, because I think if
when we called, they hadn't done it yet. And frankly, I think actually what he decided to do was to offer it up if they take it at the high end of the buyback piece.
Okay, understood. Yes, I believe that the deadline for your decision was May 18th, so just a couple weeks back. But yeah, the company offered $85 a share in the tender. Stock today's low 70s. The reason that companies do this is because they want to retire shares of their stock and to get you, to coax you. This is not true of every case, but this is why companies buy stock back in general, is that they decide, you know what? We have extra cash. In some cases, they borrow the cash, but in some cases, they have it. And by retiring shares, with fewer shares traded to own the same kind of a company, that makes share prices go up. And so without knowing that much about Kerr McGee, off the top of my head, I can tell you that that's the motivation. And certainly Warren Buffett, as an investor, has often taught and counseled others to look for companies that are buying back their stock over time. Usually it happens in passive ways. What Kerr McGee did was a Dutch auction. And without getting too complicated, we'll just say that that was sort of an unorthodox thing that Kerr McGee did. And I think your husband, in that the stock was being tendered for $85 and today trades in the low 70s, not too much later, you know, I think that would have been a good short-term exit if that was the goal for that 200-share investment.
Okay.
Well, so
okay, so you don't think it was a mistake to not take it. You just think it wouldn't have been bad either to have tendered them up.
Right, Sarah.
Kind of, it's kind of a neutral.
It sounds like your hands were a bit full this
yeah,
time.
Thank
but
you.
Are you kidding me? You know what? All investing and all financial discussion on the Motley Fool Radio Show takes place under the knowledge that we all have lives much richer than just our finances. Our finances can enrich our lives, but the truth is that spending time with an infant is one of the most wonderful excuses I can ever imagine for not exactly getting to fill out the form to send to these guys who would have done this and this and that time. And I really do mean that, Sarah. So
that's kind of you. I stay home with both our girls, and that's been it's been a financial downturn for us, but I think it's worth it long term.
I do too. And thank you very much for calling. Hope we were helpful. Call anytime again.
Okay, thank you.
The phone number is 866-NPR-FOOL, and we're going to Los Angeles, and Rob is on the line. Hi, Rob.
Hi, guys.
How are you?
Actually, I have a quick question. Right now, I'm 22 years old,
mm-hmm.
and I have about $50,000 in the bank. I wanted to invest in something that would be a little more aggressive than the usual investment strategy for somebody maybe in their 30s or 40s. I was wondering what strategy would I go with that. Mm-hmm. Right now, I'm just starting off, and I really don't have a clue.
Okay. You're just where's this 50 grand come from?
50 grand comes from my own business. Right now, I do run my own business.
And this is a legal business, Rob.
Yes, of course it is.
We need to make sure of that on this show. This is public radio, after all.
Absolutely. Of course.
What is the business?
It's actually an import performance parts business where I sell performance parts for import cars.
For cars. Okay.
Oh, yeah. That.
So it makes them sound better, look better, go faster.
You know, and actually, one thing that I remember was hot in the aftermarket accessories for cars market 10 years ago, and Rob, I just want to hear whether or not it's still hot.
Sure.
For a while, I was reading articles about how it was cool to, like, have your car glow from underneath. Maybe.
Yes, that's still still a trend right now.
We're still doing that? Because I need in my life to be driving the areas where I see more of those cars. I have to admit, I love the look. I almost never see it these days, but you're telling me, Rob, people are still in the market for those glow tires and glow undersides of your cars.
Not necessarily glow tires, but absolutely having the glowing under your car. The reason you don't see them very often is because the police do crack down on them pretty seriously. So if they are installed, they're usually not on while they're driving. And they usually come on if they want to show somebody else who has a nice car and they're just displaying it on the highway or at a meet.
Okay. Ah. Actually, Rob, David was just looking for validation about his glow undercarriage. So thank you for providing that. And David, keep it off when the cops are around.
Now, I know Rob has asked a good question about what to do with his finances, but I have to say, first of all, congratulations to Rob for having racked up that much. Obviously, this is a cash flow positive business, sounds like, Rob.
Absolutely. I have a positive cash flow between $10,000 to $15,000 a month, depending on how much business we are doing.
That's fabulous.
And what is the most typical enhancement that and what vehicle are you doing it on?
Most typical enhancement we're looking at are usually the first ones to go on the car after you purchase the car. We're looking at the intakes and also the exhaust system. The intake system lets the car get more fresh air in.
Uh-huh.
So it lets the car breathe much better and adds about 10 horsepower. And the exhaust system lets the car breathe out better, I guess.
And Rob, if you had to typify your customer, who is coming to you? What is that person? How old are they? What do they look like? What are they thinking? Are they wanting to drag? Are they racing on the weekends or what?
More for the sound and the performance aspect. Yes. Usually people who come to me are around probably between the 17 to 25 years old.
Right? Okay.
They do have somewhat of a pretty large disposable income, considering that most of them do live at home. So the part-time jobs and the full-time jobs that they do work, it all goes towards, you know, their cars.
That's what they're saving for. You know, I've always thought that this is a great business. I have to say, I asked Rob these questions not even knowing myself, but the aftermarket accessories for cars business seems to me you're selling to people who are enthusiasts, so you've got a great baked-in customer base there.
Absolutely.
And you're able to sell them lots of different stuff. And I'm sure you've got a nice margin on a lot of those things. So it's always felt like this sort of, there's no national chain, really. I mean, there's no really clear brand that you would select to say, oh, yeah, as soon as I buy my car, I go right over to them because they are like the McDonald's of this business. They help me with my aftermarket accessories.
Right. They do have a lot of brand name aftermarket systems. However, you can purchase them through many distributors, both online and in a retail setting. The competition in this business is quite fierce, actually, considering that anybody who has an internet connection can go online and open up a shop.
Well, I guess that's true. How have you managed to find your customers, then?
Customers they go through either word of mouth. I do a little advertising on the side, like flyers and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's a small internet presence also, of course. Hmm.
And you probably drive a pretty sweet ride.
Yes, actually, I have a 94 twin-turbo Supra.
Okay, now Rob asked a good question. Maybe we should actually spend some time trying to answer that. Rob, $50,000, what, sitting in a checking account, is it?
Actually, yeah, it's sitting checking account. The people at the bank have suggested a savings account. However, it's like I think less than 1%, and that doesn't even cover inflation right now. So I wanted something a little more aggressive. And considering that I do have a long time to go before my retirement, I'm willing to take on the risk that's required to make the profit.
You're saying all the right things.
That $50K in the checking account, you know, gets you 1% and maybe free checking. So that's not a huge incentive. And especially at your age, you could be doing a lot with that money if the income keeps up. And we're talking some significant money to start really making work for your future. And maybe we're talking early retirement.
Absolutely. That's one of my goals. I'm thinking of retiring in my early 30s, hopefully.
Wow. Well, good for you. The first step is just a very technical one. It's opening a discount brokerage account. If you're online, you're comfortable with the internet, you can do this quite easily. Most of the major brokerage houses have websites, and they often have deals that they're offering people to open a new account. What a discount brokerage account gets you is easy access to buying shares of companies or mutual funds.
Right.
And it's kind of the do-it-yourself model, which we generally champion here at The Motley Fool. Now, not everybody is really knowledgeable enough or skilled enough to do all their investing themselves, but at least starting with an index fund, which is the simple mechanical way to save larger amounts of money over longer periods of time, we favor that a lot. And I know we've used that phrase a lot on the show, and we probably will continue to do that. So, Rob, if you were to open up a discount brokerage account and then deposit that $50,000 check into it, you know, you could take a nice portion of that, even up to all of it, and I think put it into an S&P 500 index fund, one that just mechanically will buy you positions in 500 of the largest companies in America.
Okay.
And if you just do that, let it ride for a decade plus, keep adding to it on a monthly basis. If you have 10 to 15 more coming in each month, and you can clear at least some of that in long-term savings, that's a great thing just to keep adding to. Now, you could probably achieve higher returns by being more aggressive, but I will say that there is something to be said for not being too aggressive if you have good cash flow, because you can start to position the savings not as a lot of us feel, I hope it goes up, but I just want to keep preserving and letting this grow passively. That can be a good counterpoint to the amount of money you may be making in a more aggressive business way.
Right.
Rob, let me ask you in closing, one tip to speed up my Dodge Dart. What do I do? Is it still about oxygen intake? Do I still need to open it up in there a little bit?
No, I think you need to buy a new car. That's the tip I'm going to give you.
That is a wonderful answer. Rob, near Los Angeles, thanks a lot for giving us a call.
Thank you so much.
The phone number is 866-NPR-FOOL, 866-677-3665. You know, Diana, sometimes I'm reminded that we all can try to make good money as investors, and that's certainly a focus of our show. But really, for a lot of us, just picking up whatever we love, making a business out of it, and just driving forward that way. You know, a lot of the people on the Forbes 500 list of the wealthiest people aren't people who invested their way there. They're people who started businesses, started companies, did stuff they loved, and got there. You know, Rob's a young guy. Who knows? We'll see.
Yep.
20, 30 years from now.
Sounds great.
To St. Louis, Missouri we go. Wendy, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
What's on your mind?
I'm so far a non-investor who has for years wanted to invest, but I honestly don't know the safe first steps to take.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. Great question.
Yep. The beginning investor.
By the way, you're not the only one out there with this question. This is a very generally felt question, because I think a lot of us hear Social Security is going away. We have to look after ourselves. Where's the best place to be? Well, stocks for the long term. Well, what do I do?
I think my favorite approach, it's a woman I know, she's employed this one to great success over the years, and that's a two-step process to start investing. Step one, buy a stock. Step two, research the stock.
In that order?
Yeah. Well, let me tell you this. She has successfully purchased many stocks over the years. Now, you've probably heard David and myself say frequently on this show that everybody should own at least one stock.
Yes.
And that is a great idea for several reasons. The first of which is when you own a stock, you start to learn a lot about that company. You start paying attention. You start really caring about how that company does.
And you're more interesting at cocktail parties. Let's face it. Because now you have even more perceptive points to make.
That's right.
About one or another consumer experience.
And no one has to know that you only own one share of eBay.
But my thing is, I'm not even sure the first step to even buy a stock. Do I just call a financial person and say, hey, I want to buy this stock, and then go from there? Do I go online and buy it directly?
And Wendy, that's what we're here to help with. What we're talking about here is, a lot of us opened up bank accounts often in high school. We found, you're growing up now, son or daughter, it's time for you to have your own account. Let's open up your first checking account or bank account.
My passbook savings account at Capital Federal Savings and Loan in Lawrence, Kansas. I remember it well.
There we go. So that's the bad news is, you can't just do that. You already did that. The good news is, this process is very similar. So all we're talking about, Wendy, is opening up your first brokerage account, and it is through a brokerage account that you can buy and sell stocks. We prefer to buy more than sell. But what that entails is either through a friend who might be an investor, or reading financial magazines, or going online and finding out who are the brokerage account, the discount brokers often, that you'd want to do business with. You've probably seen ads for Charles Schwab, Ameritrade, E-Trade. Those are the discount brokers. Uh-huh. You've probably seen ads for Merrill Lynch and a bunch of more expensive so-called full-service brokers.
The ones where the advisors are sitting there in the expensive suits talking to their clients.
Yeah, and their clients are usually in slow motion. And so you've seen all of the advertising. In the end, these services are more similar than different. And in general, we at The Motley Fool favor ones where, if you're going to be buying stock, just pay this much money to buy the stock, since there's no additional value to paying twice that much money. So we like to price shop and know that we're buying, usually through a discount broker, cheaper stock. So that is your first step, and it involves filling out a form.
Okay.
It's a piece of paper, or you can go online, fill out the electronic form. They'll say, okay, we've duly received it, and now please just deposit your check anytime you write them a check, and the check gets deposited, and you now have a brokerage account. And it's at this point that you can pick up the phone and start ordering people around to do whatever you want them to do, like buy, sell, click a mouse button. They have to react within 5 seconds of your mouse click. So whether you want to do it online or offline, you are now in the game. Although, Wendy, I hope you understand, we don't really play it too much like a game.
Okay, no, I definitely understand.
Yes, we like safe, patient, long-term investing. We're not really clicking our mouse too often, although we do love being regular, saving 5 to 10% of your salary and putting it into either index funds or stocks that you would like to be a part owner of.
This is definitely for the long term.
Excellent. Wonderful.
You're on the right trajectory
right
here.
One step at a time.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Wendy, thank
you. Good luck.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And that's all the time we have for this week. The full phones are officially closed. Diana, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, David.
The phone lines are open during the week, though. Give us a call. 866-NPR-FOOL is the number.